This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. One of the biggest planned developments in Charlotte history is coming to the banks of the Catawba River. 1,300 acres on which they plan to build thousands of homes and apartments and millions of square feet of office space, shops, restaurants, hotels, parks, green space, with access to the waterfront. This Ballantyne on the Catawba is called the River District and will take decades to build out. There will need to be more roads, water and sewer lines, and more schools, to name just a few of the infrastructure needs. This mini-city came before the Charlotte City Council for a zoning vote in November and was approved unanimously. Because the development was given the green light, we thought it would be a good idea to listen back to our conversation from last month with all of the details on the River District. But first, WFAE's David Borax fills us in on the response to the proposed development and reminds us what City Council members had to say at the zoning meeting.
The River District has been in the works since 2014, though it wasn't announced publicly until this past March. It includes nearly 1,400 acres between I-485 and the Catawba River. It's the city's biggest project since the 1990s, when development began at Ballantyne in South Charlotte. The city will spend about $45 million in the coming years to build and upgrade roads. That'll help recruiting, says the Charlotte Chamber's Natalie English.
What's exciting about the River District is that, like Ballantyne, like the University City, like South Park, and like the Center City, that we're investing in some infrastructure that will then improve our ability to land future economic development opportunities that will bring new jobs.
Right now, it's mostly rural land outside the city limits. Developers Crescent Communities and Lincoln Harris have been acquiring rights to the land for years in hopes of pulling off a major project. Councilmember Claire Fallon says it should help the city grow without suburban sprawl.
This will be self-contained with jobs, mixed income, restaurants. It is the wave of the future for cities. I'm glad to see it. I'm happy to approve it.
The project hasn't had many opponents. Roger Diedrich of the Central Piedmont Sierra Club was the only one to oppose the project at a public hearing last month.
To allow creation of a new large activity center outside the planned growth area is promoting sprawl at a time when people, especially young professionals, are seeking lifestyles in close-in urban locations.
Diedrich says the project would harm the environment and add traffic that will bring a clamor for more roads. Other concerns have been raised about the need for schools, parks, and other public services. The developers promised to set aside land for two schools for 10 years. It'll be up to CMS to raise the money. Officials also are looking for one or two fire station sites. About 550 acres would be reserved for greenways, parks, and open space. That will include Charlotte's first public access on the Catawba Riverfront. The River District is smaller than Ballantyne in area, but would have double the office space, about 8 million square feet. The rezoning also allows up to 500,000 square feet of shops and restaurants and several hotels. And there's lots of housing, a total of 4,700 apartments and single-family homes. At least a third of those would be single-family detached homes. Unlike Ballantyne, some of those units will be lower-cost workforce housing. That's a priority of the City Council right now and was part of the deal to approve the rezoning. Here's Councilmember Lawana Mayfield.
So if you work in the potential development of jobs that will be created in that area, whether you're an upper management executive or employees, you will have an opportunity to hopefully not only live but progress, first home, graduate, or apartment.
85 rental units in the first phase, and 8% of future housing units would be reserved for households earning less than 80% of the area median household income. Don't expect a rapid transformation. The developers say the River District will take 20 to 30 years to build. For WFAE News, I'm David Borax in Charlotte.
Last month, we invited several people to join us to explore this new opportunity to push west and began with Eli Portillo, who has covered this extensively in the Charlotte Observer. He explains where exactly this massive development will be located.
So if you're familiar with where Charlotte Douglas International Airport is, it'll be west and slightly south of that, and basically between the airport and the river, or between 485 and the river, if that's an easier reference for you there.
And what's there now? Is it just wilderness, or do people actually live there?
There are people who live there. It's mostly undeveloped land. A lot of the land, about, I believe, 900 acres, is owned by Crescent Communities, which started life as a spinoff of Duke Power. Mm-hmm. And this land was, used for timber, but mostly kept undeveloped.
So Can you get there from here, or do roads have to be constructed?
Well, you can get there, but you'll definitely need a lot more roads in order to develop this intensely. I've driven out there, and it's very strange in some ways because you get down West Boulevard, and then you can turn onto some side roads there, and very quickly you don't feel as though you're in Mecklenburg County anymore. You get past the airport, and the planes don't even fly over there because of the north-south orientation of the runway, and you feel in a very throwback rural world.
Kind of like the Whitewater Center area. But that was going to be my next question. Noise from the airport. And you're saying there's no noise from the airport, really? Because we've heard West Side residents complain about the airport noise. None?
Well, I've been out there, and there's a little noise, especially if you're on the eastern side of the site, close to the airport, but not really nearly as much as you would expect because the runways are north-south for takeoffs and most landings, and planes just don't fly over a mile, 2 miles, 3 miles west of the airport. They can't turn that sharply.
One of your key jobs at the Charlotte Observer is to cover development and developers and what's going on with that and growth in the city, et cetera. How has this land remained untouched for so long?
Well, there's a lot of factors there. I think access with roads that you mentioned is one factor. Another factor is the sewers, and gravity is a big factor there, and we can talk a little more about that, but the land slopes, and it's kind of a little more rugged than a lot of other parts of the county, and you would need to build pumping stations, so it's much more expensive to run sewer lines out there than some places that have developed more rapidly. And also, I think a lot of it has to do with, again, the land being owned by Crescent, as we talked about, which was a land management company that wanted to keep it as a timberland for a long time and didn't feel pressure to develop it.
So what's changed?
Well, I think we've talked about this a few times before, but Charlotte is growing very rapidly. I wrote a story a few weeks ago about the demographics of this city, and we are somewhere around number 9, depending on how you cut the numbers, in terms of fastest growing cities in the U.S. And we've got about 109 new residents a day from 2010 to 2015. That includes births, but a lot of that is people moving to the area. So there's a market, and there's land that's owned by a developer, most of it, and it's time to develop it, they believe.
Only longtime Charlotte natives will remember that the Park Road Shopping Center used to be a farm. South Park, I believe, also used to be a farm, and that's its development is relatively recent, and even more recent is Ballantyne, which there was nothing there in 1985. Nothing.
Not even then, in 1995.
Exactly. So put this project in comparison to South Park and Ballantyne and what has happened there in the last 40 years.
Well, I moved here in 2009, and I was really surprised to discover how recent and how young Ballantyne was.
Yeah.
I went back and looked actually at some of the Charlotte Observer articles about when it was first announced, and they had the same tone that we use now of, wow, this is all farmland, and they're actually going to build stuff here. In scale, Ballantyne is probably a decent starting point to think of. Ballantyne right now has about 4 million square feet of office space in Ballantyne Corporate Park, and the River District is seeking permission to build up to 8 million square feet plus residences.
But in terms of land size, I've called this a massive project, and I guess it's because it entails so many different pieces, from apartments to homes to businesses, etc. But when you look at it on a map that I looked at yesterday, it doesn't look that much bigger than the airport. And that doesn't seem massive to me. It just seems airporty, if that makes any sense. Is this massive? Is it bigger in land mass than Ballantyne?
Not in total acreage, but in terms of the amount of stuff that would be built there, offices, shops, retail, houses, apartments, it would be comparable, if not bigger, in some parts, like more office, for example. In terms of land mass, Ballantyne is bigger, but this would be more intensively developed and more dense.
That's Eli Portillo, an economic development reporter with the Charlotte Observer. When we continue our conversation in just a moment, we'll talk with one of the developers of this project. The River District was approved unanimously by the Charlotte City Council last month. This is Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the River District, a piece of land that will be highly developed between the airport and the Catawba River. It was approved unanimously by the Charlotte City Council last month. And this hour, we're listening back to our conversation about all of this. Our guests include Eli Portillo, reporter for the Charlotte Observer, and Mary Newsom, Associate Director for Urban and Regional Affairs at UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute. We also spoke with someone intimately involved with the project, one of the developers behind the River District. Brian Leary is president of commercial and mixed-use development at Crescent Communities. And I asked him, why West Charlotte and why now?
I think the stars are starting to align. The airport is a much more efficient, less noisy place than it might have been 40 years ago. Airplane technology is improved. The runways are mostly north and south. This is on the other side of the airport. Most of the other submarkets in Charlotte are now, in many ways, not affordable. Mm-hmm. Try buying an apartment in South End or Uptown or South Park. And so we thought it was time to put this into production, land that we've been farming, really, with timber. And we started a process with the city in a real public-private partnership. We knew we had one idea. Let's go ahead and turn it into a walkable, mixed-use environment. And many times people want to use the Ballantyne reference, which I think is a fine one, maybe just from a size and a quality standpoint. And by the way, Ballantyne's not done yet developing either.
Right.
So it still has a ways to go. So if you want to compare what the River District is proposing to be 30-plus years from now to what Ballantyne is today, it's a little bit of apples and oranges. If it's apples to apples, it's maybe two different types of apples. So we started the conversation. Well, let's create a place out here, a new collection of villages. And you said it's a piece of land. It might be more of a collection of land that we have owned for a long time that Lincoln Harris is working with the owners to rezone, to create a series of villages and walkable mixed-use centers.
It's going to be the first area, I think, of any massive, of any size, of any consequence on the water. I suppose you can refer to Lake Norman and Lake Wylie, but this seems different to me somehow. Is it?
Well, I'd say it's different because it will not be a waterfront development because the areas that we have that actually still touch the water. A lot of the land we sold to people who live on the water today, and we're not talking about rezoning that or doing any development there. The areas that we do have been identified for public space, parks. So we won't have, it won't be like even Rock Hills development on the river. It'll be more of a public connection to the river, ideally through the woods, kayak landings, things like that. There'll be no marina. There'll be no kind of waterfront bars.
Why not?
Well, you know,
that seems to be attractive.
Well, I think we might have enough of that at Lake Norman and some other places. We thought that this land was, at least to us, is pretty special. And so the first lines we drew out there when we were drawing the master plan were the streams. And then the next line we drew were the watersheds. And the next line we drew were the steep slopes. And the next line we drew were the trees that had been there for a long time. And so we really believe that most of America and a good deal of Charlotte is craving a reconnection to nature with all the amenities of the city.
I guess the challenge here is it's rural. It's undeveloped at the moment. It's kind of wilderness except for pockets of people and their homes. And the challenge, I would imagine, is to keep it seemingly that way. And yet you're going to add 4,000 apartments and single-family homes and 500,000 square feet of shops and restaurants and retail and 8 million square feet of office space. How?
Almost 1,500 acres. That's the thing. If anyone who's really interested in this, go drive out there and realize kind of how vast the area is. A couple of things. I think the key is grouping these uses together. We've seen through the last 50 years that when you spread everything out and you separate uses, you then make it more expensive and difficult to connect those uses. So for years, we had zoning that made shops be a distance from residential homes, a distance from where we work. And so then we had to drive everywhere because we couldn't afford or we didn't think far enough ahead to put transit in. So now by clustering this development into villages and town centers, we'll be able to preserve over 40% of all the land that's out there will be preserved and won't be developed at all.
It doesn't seem, Mary, to be a lot of, I haven't heard any, a lot of opposition to this. And it sounds like they're taking a lot of different pieces of the puzzle into consideration in some sort of a responsible manner. What's your take?
I went to the public hearing, and there was, you're right, there was a lot of sort of, this is a great idea, this is a great project. Some of the most cautionary notes came from city council themselves, talking about 120,000, is it motor vehicle trips per day, if you calculate out the number of houses, you know, and kind of scratching their heads, how in the world do we manage all of this? There wasn't a lot of talk about schools because city council doesn't pay for schools. There wasn't a lot of talk about parks. The developers are saying they'll set land aside and let the county buy land for parks or buy land for schools. But there was a guy from the Sierra Club, I happened to be sitting next to him, who made a very strong statement saying, wait a minute, what the heck are you doing? This is a huge development. Have you planned for transit? Well, no, because there's no money for transit. The other thing that I've heard rumblings, but I didn't hear anybody really talking about it publicly, was public access to the waterfront. You mentioned Rock Hill. There's a great, great trail in Riverwalk, 4 miles. You can walk right along the Catawba River. It's fabulous. It's been jammed every time I've been there. I don't think anything like that is planned here. Maybe Brian can give more information about that. It looked like you couldn't run it all the way down the riverfront because the property just doesn't work that way. But I think there might be more opportunities for more of that, if possible.
Well, I heard you say that there are pockets of opportunities along the river because some people have homes along the river. You're not taking those away
them.
That's private property.
Right. No, Mary, we would absolutely love to have what Rock Hill has. The challenge a little bit is the land that we have control over or own is much less. And where you would do a river walk, there's a palisade and some bluffs that would kind of be an issue. But no, I think one of the things we've committed from day one is that those areas of the waterfront will be public. They will not be private. They will not be, won't be someone's backyard. And so we think that's really important because think about the city limits of Charlotte doesn't have any place where it touches the river as far as I know.
Eli, you and I have talked about this many times when we talked about a development and the reasons for these 10,000, 20,000 apartment units that have gone up around town, particularly in the Uptown, South End, Elizabeth, et cetera area, is that millennials want to live there. They don't particularly want to own. They watch what happened during the housing crisis. They want to be mobile. They want to move to the next hip area. And that makes sense because and they want to live in an urban environment. This will not necessarily be an urban environment. Does it make sense to build 4,000 apartments?
Well, I think it depends on how you look at an urban environment. This won't be, for example, another Uptown or another NoDa, but this will be something different than a subdivision with 3 houses per acre, 5 houses per acre. So this will have some of those mixes of uses that we've talked about as being attractive to people in the M-word millennial demographic. And as the token millennial here, I can attest that if you put a brewery out there, you'll probably solve all those issues. But I think that this will have some of those things that really attract people who want to live in a denser environment, like shops, restaurants, retail, and offices that you can walk or bike to. So I know from talking to Brian that that's one of their aims.
So I have this big number, this 4,000 units, housing units, apartments and single family. How are you dividing them up? How many apartments versus homes? And what kinds of homes? How big?
I'm glad you asked that because you said a second ago 4,000 apartments, and right. We're not proposing 4,000 apartments. Right. Most of the housing out there will be probably single family homes. But our goal on day one, unlike maybe some other master plan developments in the past, is that it's actually mixed income. So that a millennial getting their first job or a boomer retiring and everyone in between or folks maybe working at the airport, not necessarily flying the plane, but maybe even loading baggage, could find a home there. And so we have a commitment to affordable housing day one.
Am I hearing affordable housing?
Absolutely you are. And the other thing too, as you mentioned about millennials, who's out at the Whitewater Center right now?
Millennials.
Mm-hmm. And it's many ways the millennials are flooding in the South. And why? Because you've got that vibrancy and a mix of uses. You have access to jobs. And so we think that those same millennials who are also heading out to the parks and Whitewater Center want to be connected to nature.
So in terms of price point,
sure.
from apartments to single-family homes, what are we talking about? What do you envision?
Every price point. We really do. I mean, I know
million-dollar homes? Half-million-dollar homes?
Well, we can't underwrite a million-dollar home right now because that market isn't proven out there right now. But if you look just to the south, there's a community. The number one selling neighborhood or community in Charlotte right now is Berwick, just to the south. And mm-hmm. so while you do drive around the River District and feel like you are at the end of the earth or maybe up near Asheville, you go 2 minutes to the south and there's a new Harris Teeter being built.
500,000 square feet of retail space. Put that into perspective. How big is that? I mean, is that like South Park? Is it like...
It's much smaller than South Park. To give you an idea, I think the goal for that 500,000 square feet would be a lot of little boxes. And let's also recognize it may never get built. Only 200,000 may get built, 250. This is a process for entitling, and then the market will determine what is built. But to give you an idea, a typical IKEA, right, one single IKEA, on average in the United States, is about 350,000 square feet.
Oh, okay. So you're not talking about great big shopping mall. You're talking shops that will service the needs of people who locate there and people who work there, like
correct.
Dry cleaners and small markets and maybe a grocery store.
Or
a
brewery.
Really? We keep coming back to that.
We're talking to breweries right now who are very interested about being part of this.
Okay. And then you have 8 million square feet of office space. Compare that to Uptown.
Well, it's definitely smaller than Uptown. I mean, Uptown is the largest submarket in Charlotte. And again, this is something that would take place over time. And one of the things from a transit perspective, if we have nothing but residential out there, everyone then has to leave their home or apartment and get to where they work. So if we can locate jobs near where people live, mm-hmm. right, then you're eliminating or reducing the amount of infrastructure you need, right? The cheapest infrastructure is the stuff you don't have to build. So Eli probably helped me out. The Uptown submarket is north of 25 million square feet, 20?
I think it's closer in the 40s.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I was saying, I'm always thinking just class A, mm-hmm. right? So 40 million square feet is Uptown across all classes, and we're talking about 8 million over 30-plus years out there.
Okay, so it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's going to happen over a long period of time.
Right.
When you build something like this from scratch, Mary Newsom, it's on vacant, never-before-developed land. It seems obviously easier to do this, to master plan it, so to speak, and look out your window and say, that's going here, this is going there, et cetera. But it also provides some challenges. What are they? Is it simply infrastructure challenges, getting the sewer and the water out there and the roads?
I think those are some of the challenges, and Brian is nodding yes. I think there's another challenge, and that's Brian referred to it kind of obliquely in the million-dollar house range. You don't know what the market is out there. I did an article that was published at plancharlotte.org just yesterday about the last rural areas in the county. Went out and talked to Sue Friday, who's lived out there for almost 40 years. She verifies that you don't get airplane noise there. Her opinion is that the lack of sewer was less important than the perception of West Charlotte. West Charlotte, West Mecklenburg are not perceived as the classy places to live the way South Charlotte has been.
But could this not be the next the catalyst that changes all of that?
Well, it possibly could be, and I think Crescent and Harris are hoping that that's the case. But when you go to get your financing, they're going to say, prove to me that you can do what you want to here, that people aren't just going to say, no, heck no, I'm not living over there.
Talk about that. That's
a challenge.
Talk about that.
It is a challenge. And one of the things we've gotten to know well over this last few years is West Charlotte. You know, whether the good work going on at Renaissance Walk that Laura Clark was doing there before she left, and getting to know Luana Mayfield, the city council representative. There's a great story with a lot of really good people working hard to change those perceptions about West Charlotte, to make it kind of a great quadrant. And we believe the stuff that's already happening just to the south at Berwick, which is the best-selling community in all of Charlotte, tells us that people want a place where they can walk, they have amenities, they can be close to the airport, they can get into town. So it is a bit of a gamble, and that is development. Infrastructure is tough out here. It's not currently served by a good deal of it. But we're willing to kind of make that bet that over time we'll be able to deliver that in partnership with the city. And the city has done a pretty good job of kind of governing our ability to develop unless the infrastructure is in place.
What are you hearing from people in West Charlotte, longtime residents, anything, or businesses for that matter, anything at all about the prospect of this happening in their neighborhood?
Well, in the River District area specifically, I've talked with a few folks who are, you know, longtime residents like Sue Friday, who are a little sad about the changes coming, but some of them are also almost surprised that it's taken this long. I think there's fewer residents there and less reaction. Where I've really seen more of a strong feeling is in the Berwick and Steel Creek areas. I did a story a few months ago about the growing pains that those areas are experiencing, and folks there are really just seeing a massive influx of new residential development along with retail shops, new Harris Teeter, for example. And folks there in the Steel Creek area especially, who I talked to, are really concerned about their ability to handle the traffic and some of those smaller roads there that were two-lane country roads until just a couple years ago in some cases, are feeling a lot of the pressure. So that area of Southwest Charlotte is growing extremely rapidly but is running into some bottlenecks, especially along getting from here to there, the transit and road question.
We're talking about Charlotte's River District, a massive development planned between the airport and the Catawba River on Charlotte Talks here on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're listening back to our conversation from last month about the River District, which was unanimously approved by Charlotte City Council. Our guests are Mary Newsom, Associate Director for Urban and Regional Affairs at UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute, and Eli Portillo from the Charlotte Observer. The area we're talking about is a large swath of mostly undeveloped land between the airport and the Catawba River. We spoke with one of the developers behind the project. Brian Leary is President of Commercial and Mixed Use Development at Crescent Communities, and I asked him how they are dealing with the infrastructure needs of the area, like roads.
So for the next 30 years, the development of the River District will require a good deal of upgraded infrastructure, particularly transportation infrastructure. And the city and the transportation department there have been very clear that they are not going to let the development of the River District get past a certain point before these things have to be done. And
who pays for all that?
Well, it's first and foremost, the River District, as proposed, if it gets built out, will generate about a little over $1 billion of new tax base. So if you just look at the dollars that are going to be thrown off in annual tax receipts when it's built, it would actually more than pay for itself. Now,
but there's a lag.
Pardon me?
There's a lag time.
There is a lag time, absolutely. Yeah. And so what that's called in business is an investment. Okay. Right? You make an investment to generate a return in the future.
Right.
And that is literally the calculus that this area represents. And but at the same time, we are enthusiastic about obviously carrying in our own weight and putting our own infrastructure in, the connecting roads within the neighborhoods and stuff that we'll build, and entering into a public-private partnership. In many ways, through this rezoning process, we are at risk that if we don't figure out the infrastructure, we don't go past go. While there is some development as part of phase one that could be handled with the existing infrastructure, unless we can add some improvements to the West Boulevard interchange, some interconnecting streets. So this is an area, to Mary's earlier point, West Charlotte had long been considered the you know, four out of four quadrants you might want to be in, and it's also been underinvested in a great deal. And so I think the people of West Charlotte are glad to see the investment coming.
When we talk about 4,000 housing units, Mary, and 500,000 square feet of retail space, and I think it was 8 million square feet of office space, and when this is all fully built out and occupied, I guess some of those people will live, work, and play there, but there will be traffic, and I'm told that you have, I know you've pointed out that there are concerns about increased traffic on West Boulevard and on Wilkinson Boulevard and even I-85.
Yeah, I think that there's two things going on here, and one is the in terms of infrastructure. One is, what's the developer going to do to help ameliorate the problems in that vicinity? And to be clear, the developer will build the streets, and we're hoping that it will be a dense connected network. So that people don't have to drive around as much. The developer will put in the sewer lines that run down the streets. The ratepayers of CMUD, or excuse me, Charlotte Water, are going to absorb the cost of the major pieces that are going to have to be built. But then there's the bigger picture, which is, how do you support the effects that the infrastructure needs that this development is going to throw off on the rest of the city. And Charlotte doesn't really have a strategy for that other than,
clearly,
well, we'll pay.
Yeah, because you ask a question in an article you wrote, did we learn anything from Ballantyne and its traffic? And my question back to you is, did we? Because clearly not.
I think we learned that there's going to be a lot of traffic. And I don't think that we learned how to better demand a different form going forward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the state does not allow Charlotte-Mecklenburg to do a lot of things that they can do in South Carolina, for example. We can't ask developers to pay for impact fees, you know, pay up, in addition to the roads, pay some money to help, you know, to help build parks, to help
Why
build
not?
Whatever. The legislature doesn't allow that. They allowed some counties to do it in the 80s, but then they stopped saying yes. So we don't have that. So now we have what's called exactions, which is basically the developer negotiates with the city. Yeah, or extractions is the other term. So the developers negotiate with the city or the county, but it's typically the city. How much will you give us in exchange for okaying it? And sometimes it's, I think at Ballantyne they built a whole interchange.
Right.
Because they had owned the land. Let me point out, Crissland has owned this land possibly for as long as a century. They are not paying a lot of mortgage fees on this land. The South Park and Ballantyne were land owned by the Harris family.
Right.
So they could put more money into this infrastructure. A lot of developers can't do that.
And Brian, you said, I just looked at you when we were talking about traffic, and you say you have learned from Ballantyne. What have you learned?
Well, I think if you looked at Ballantyne, again, I'm not being negative about Ballantyne by any stretch, because there's a lot of great people who live out there. But if you could take all the cars off the road of the folks who live in Ballantyne or work in Ballantyne, going to either where they live or work in Ballantyne,
right,
or a great number of them, I think you'd see there'd be a lot less traffic in Ballantyne. And so when Ballantyne was conceived, right, it was kind of the heyday of American suburbia. Things were separated, not connected, and they weren't that dense.
But getting to Ballantyne is like a nightmare come true. 485 is like a nightmare come true.
Unless you live there, right? Mm-hmm. Well, and until Ballantyne.
But if Ballantyne weren't there, would 485 be the nightmare that it is? I would say no, because there'd be no reason to go down that leg of 485.
There'd be no reason to have 485 if there was no Ballantyne. So there you go.
Chicken and the egg. Right. Eli, chime in on this.
Well, I think that does get to one of the bigger concerns, which is maybe not so much how people get around inside a development like the River District. I think the developers have spent a lot of time thinking about how to build a dense network of streets and greenway trails and footpaths within the development. I think when I talk to people in the community, especially in adjacent areas like Steel Creek, they are concerned about people getting to the River District and other communities like that. They're concerned about what happens in the bottlenecks of the roads around it, and there's not really any plan to run transit out there right now as things stand.
This seems like a great way to coax another train into existence, Mary. I mean, I think the argument could be made that we could have a connector, a light rail connector to the airport, and then it could keep going into this River District area. Is that something that could act as a Kickstarter for that?
Well, yes and no. I mean, yeah, because you'll have a lot more people at the end of the line, so that might actually help your, you know, hey, we'll have riders, feds, give us some money. Because there aren't enough people to go and just go into the airport to make the feds want to give us money.
They keep building parking lots.
Yeah. The
somebody's going there.
The other question is there's no money to pay for it. I mean, the half-cent sales tax does not bring in enough money to build any more transit lines, whether it's out west or down Independence Boulevard.
Are we adequately addressing this? Because this area has grown by leaps and bounds. It continues to grow by leaps and bounds. The idea is that the county is pretty much built out. It can't annex anything anymore. So it's going to have to, if it's going to survive, it's going to have to continue to densify. And if you densify, you can't build enough roads for the cars. So are we not going to have to address mass transit? And are we addressing it?
I think Brian and I were both shaking our heads. No, I don't think we're addressing it now. Are you guys going to dedicate transit line space?
We'd love to dedicate transit line space.
On your streets,
we would have that conversation right now. And throughout my career, I've been building transit-oriented development, day one, literally, day one.
And you came from Atlanta, didn't you?
Came from Atlanta, yes. Yeah, so don't hold that against
Look
me.
Look at that place.
Right? close to 25 years. And there's two components to effective transit, right? It's the infrastructure itself, and that's many times a technology debate. And then it's transit-supportive land use. So first and foremost, we're addressing what we have under control, which is transit-supportive land use. So we are making sure that the master plan and the rezoning petition is the most transit-supportive we can make it in terms of the land use. Now, to Mary's point, it's not just transit. It's a transportation funding issue that we have as a nation, as a state, that we've relied on the gas tax to pay for everything. In many places, it prohibits dollars to be spent on transit, so we have to come up with little half of a penny here or there to kind of cobble things together. We are woefully underinvesting in infrastructure as a country. We had an interstate highway bridge fall into the Mississippi River in Minneapolis, but at the same time, we're the United States. So it doesn't make any sense. So from a transit perspective, I think, and I don't want to speak for John Lewis, who's a great leader at CATS, I think they've identified having a transit connection, a higher technology rail transit connection to the airport, is kind of a no-brainer, and in many ways it's kind of already missing if we consider ourselves a 21st century international city. But I would argue that there are various forms of transit that could be running much faster, that might be much more affordable. And I don't want to get into the weeds on bus rapid transit, but you could deliver something like that at, say, 5 to 10 million a mile, where you might be at 50 million a mile for something different.
Now, you're also planning to keep 40% of the acreage as either natural area. That's a lot for greenways and parks and trails. That's all drawn into the master plan.
Correct.
Is the master plan for these square grid-like streets that connect so you can walk from your house to the grocery store, to your office if you work there? Is that all possible in that neighborhood?
Absolutely. And I think what's the reason why we're doing that, not only do you believe it's the right thing to do, and honestly, in the negotiations with the city, they were going to make us do it. We think that is literally what makes this place more valuable. We believe people will come here because of that.
Mm-hmm.
That is the differentiator.
And you're leaving additional land for two schools. You're setting aside land for two schools. You're also setting aside, as I said, land for parks. As I understand it, the land for the schools and the parks is going to be set aside for 7 years, and then the county in that 7 years has to ante up the money to buy that land from you. What if they can't? What if they can't find that money?
Well, a couple of things. If the second call we made after we called the city about this was the school system, because we cannot build a bunch of houses out there and expect people to move there with their families if we don't have good schools and enough schools. And so to the extent that something happens at the end of 7 years and the school system says, well, we need an eighth or we need 10, we are motivated as much as anyone, more so, to make sure that those schools are going in.
Crescent started as an offshoot, and I guess it still is in a way, of Duke Energy. Duke Energy, we all know, runs the chain of the waterway chain from Lake Mountain Island Lake and Lake Norman down through the Catawba into Lake Wylie. And argument can be made that they have been a very good steward of that. But as development has increased along those waterways, there has been some silt damage and things like that, drainage damage along the Catawba. What are you doing to protect the Catawba from this development?
Well, as we mentioned earlier, first, we're pulling development off the river. We're not going to be building much of anything on the river. Second, there's some really good lessons learned from even the development of the outlet center just to the south, where they were able to actually improve water quality and repair some of the things that had been maybe missed some years before. And so what I said the second call we made was the school system. I think the third call we made was to the riverkeeper, because we really want to create a best practice and an exemplar place.
And what was the riverkeeper's reaction to this idea?
I'm sure at first it was a bit skeptical, right, because it's big. But at the same time, I think this is one thing that, you know, you don't ever say, trust me, kind of like the cover of Mad Magazine, right? But Lincoln Harris and Crescent have been in this community for a very long time. This is our home. I think most people would recognize that what we build separately together is high quality. It's respectful to the neighborhoods in which it builds and is environmentally focused.
That's Brian Leary, president of commercial and mixed-use development at Crescent Communities. We also spoke with Mary Newsom from UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute and Charlotte Observer reporter Eli Portillo. We've been talking about the River District, which will be located between the airport and the Catawba River. It was approved unanimously by City Council last month. The project will take decades to fully build out, but the work has already begun. Developers expect that some of the trails in the area will be open to the public as early as next summer, and the first homes should be finished in 2 years. This is Charlotte Talks on WFAE.